Hi, I'm Dave Radlauer. This is Artie Shaw Redux, the life and music of bandleader and clarinetist Artie Shaw. Welcome to Jazz Rhythm, a weekly exploration of the culture, lore, and personalities of early jazz. In this hour, we'll learn of Artie Shaw's development as an exceptional musician, leading one of the finest swing ensembles of the 1930s and 40s. Before his huge success of the late 30s, Artie Shaw was just another hardworking, though very talented, musician. Music was actually his second career choice. He entered music only to make enough money to follow his real aspiration, which was to become a writer. But on his way to simply earning a living, deeper involvement in music seized Artie Shaw's fertile mind and willing heart. The words of Artie Shaw as read by Peter Coyote.
I heard Bix and Trumbauer, and I said, those are the guys. Being a white guy, I was subjected to white music, and I heard Bix and Trumbauer, and they were the exemplars. The first Louis Armstrong record I stumbled on was Savoy Blues. I can sing it for you right now. I can write out his whole solo. And something about that, I realized I was no longer playing music. I was playing an art form, something bigger than music. And I had to learn what that was all about. It had its own inner structure. I couldn't have used words like that, but I knew there was something going on there that I had to figure out. All of this was inarticulate, very chaotic in my mind. I went to see Louis Armstrong in Chicago. I made a pilgrimage and drove up from Cleveland. And I sat on a rug-covered bandstand and just waited. And he came on. And the first thing he played was West End Blues. And I heard this cascade of notes coming out of a trumpet. No one had ever done that before. And so I was obsessed with the idea that this was what you had to do. Something that was your own. That had nothing to do with anybody else. I was influenced by him, not in terms of notes, but in terms of the idea of doing what you are, who you are.
At Sundown, a live broadcast from 1939, one of the many Artie Shaw rarities issued on a 5-CD set selected by Shaw for a lasting self-portrait on BMG's Bluebird label. More from that ahead, along with vocalists Helen Forrest, Lena Horne, and Tony Pastor, jazz trumpeters Orrin Hotlips Page, Billy Butterfield, and Roy Eldridge on this jazz rhythm portrait of Artie Shaw. Throughout this hour-long program, we're going to hear from Shaw's own recollections and reflections on music, both as read by Peter Coyote and from Shaw himself, as heard in a film documentary from the 80s called Time Is All You've Got. Buster Harding was one of the arranger-composers who wrote for Artie Shaw's many bands. Here's his jumping The Hornet from 1945.
I decided I would write a piece for a string quartet and jazz clarinet and add a small rhythm section for when the jazz stuff started, just as a kick. And I called it Interlude in B-flat for the simple reason that it was in B-flat and it was to fill an interlude. So there it was. We played the piece. It was a three-minute piece. That was what they needed, 3 minutes. So I wrote a piece that lasted roughly 3 minutes and a few seconds, give or take. Well, to my astonishment and everybody else on the program, the thing absolutely broke up the show. People whistled and cheered and clapped and yelled. And so I stood there and said, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know what to do. I mean, I wrote this one piece, and that's all we have. I haven't got anything else. So somebody yelled, long before Casablanca, play it again. So we called out the cello player and the viola player and the two string fiddlers and the group, and we played it again. And this time they were deadly quiet, and that was it. So as a result of that, shortly afterwards, I started getting calls from agents. So I put together my first band, which was a string quartet and a small jazz band with a small rhythm section. Section well tuned is a beautiful instrument. And yes, I liked it. It gave me much more range musically for doing some of the things I want to do. The string men were sort of the legitimate section, and the jazz guys were the usual jazz guys. Matter of fact, they had almost a rigid separation in lifestyles. We traveled in two different buses at times, and even in one bus, the strings were always in one part of the bus and the jazz band in another. Now and then there would be crossovers. It was like two enemy camps, two alien camps.
I have a letter from a violinist who worked in my first band, string quartet-based jazz band. And he wrote me a letter saying that he had gone through all the conservatories he could think of, and he thought he knew something about music by the time he joined my band. He said he learned more in the first rehearsal than in all the years he'd been playing violin, because I was talking about music, not about notes, not about how you play them, but where they fit in with the rest of the band. You're playing with other people.